Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another great episode of the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. I'm Bruce Cameron, along with Justin Nimmergood.
Hey, everyone.
Well, this show is a few days after Thanksgiving 2018, so happy Thanksgiving. Hope you had a good time with family, loved ones, and others that I thought.
Yeah, absolutely, Bruce. We spent it out here in L.A., or the L.A. area, I should say. So for us, it was scaled back. I kind of jokingly told you offline last week, it was scaled back from the five that we participated in last year. So we only had three this year, kind of a morning brunch-ish type of Thanksgiving, a late afternoon, and then an evening dessert Thanksgiving. So needless to say, we came home with several plates of leftovers. Any of which I actually threw away this morning because I couldn't bear to look at them anymore because I can't fit in my pants anymore. So,
yeah. Yep. An extra notch outward on the belt for me for a few weeks to train wreck it all again on Christmas. that's just kind of how the cycle goes. But
How about you? You're up in Minnesota, right?
Yeah, right. Minneapolis area, and seeing family up there. Had a good good visit, and wasn't too cold. I feared that it was going to be really, really super cold, but it turned out to be just fine. So had a good time up there, and then back here late last night. So back in black down here, man, hitting it and working again. And so, yeah, all the coaching clients seem to fare well with their families and whatnot. We talked a little bit about that. So
good.
Yeah, all good. And, you know, and we'll get to it later, but, you know, just really had some interesting conversations with some other folks about the show and what we do singularly or what we do corporately as a show, and man, really, you know, picked up some interest there, and folks are always exciting, you know, to hear about coaching and entrepreneurship. You know, either they want to do it, they're doing it, or they wish they had somebody help them do it. So it's such a cool thing. And you know, you're always one conversation away from another client or another opportunity.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just me, you know, Bruce, but I feel like as I mature in my coaching and consulting practice, you know, it becomes more second nature. And whether you want to or not, and it's not even finding anymore. I think opportunities seem to attract themselves, you know, to you more and more. And sometimes they're little ones and sometimes they're informal ones. And especially around the holidays, I found myself, you know, coaching, doing, you know, informal coaching sessions with several family members throughout our time, both for Thanksgiving and kind of through the weekend. We had various parties and festivities through the weekend that we attended. So it's just a really interesting time. I feel like it's a time that people are more mindful. They're more open to coaching. They're more open to making life changes. I don't know if you found that as well, you know, from your side, just kind of in your time with your family and whatnot.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's always a time of reflection for a lot of people. You know, they're reflecting not only on themselves and their station, their family station, and kind of, you know, the year starting to wind down, the calendar year anyway, or tax year, what have you, is starting to wind down, and people are you know, reflecting on the year as well, and what they did and where they're headed and where they might want to go the next year. And, you know, one of the things I tried to focus on was to, you know, not tell people, hey, so what do you do? I try not to say, oh, I'm a coach, or I'm a this, or I'm a that. I always try to make it into a conversation, you know, about how I help people with several different types of needs, you know what I mean? And make it into more of a conversation, and rather than just kind of a title driven, you know, stale old school deal. And man, it just really, really opens things up, you know? And, so yeah.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Well,
different types of people. So it was good week, and looking forward to another one and seeing what opportunities avail themselves this week down here in the Metroplex. So
yes, likewise out here in LA, and thankfully, you know, no fatalities or family accidents from Black Friday too. So that's also a positive.
Good point.
Well, I'm extremely excited, Bruce, to introduce, you know, and bring onto our show today, you know, a now a friend of mine, and our guest for today. You know, this is a gentleman that, you know, I've just met recently, but just in the several conversations we've had, I can tell, you know, he's not only the type of individual, the man, the leader on society, the type of people that we definitely want, you know, on our show and certainly sharing with our listeners. Ryan Condie, you know, just a bit about Ryan before I formally, you know, bring him on here. He's truly a serial entrepreneur, you know, and Ryan self-proclaimed, you know, he knows what it takes to build, grow, and scale businesses. He actually brings over 10 years of successful, innovative vision and leadership experience. And he's been focused mostly on driving end-to-end productivity that provides optimal efficiency and effectiveness for his internal and external client operations. So I'm very excited, pleased, and pleasure to have Ryan Condie on our show today. Ryan, welcome.
Yeah. Hey, Justin. Thanks, guys, so much for bringing me on board. I'm excited.
We are too. So I know I just gave kind of the shortened version of your bio there, Ryan, but you know, maybe in your own words, who is Ryan Condie? Tell our listeners.
Well, yeah. Well, you hit it on the head. Yes, I am a serial entrepreneur. I'm currently 35 years old. I co-own right now 7 different businesses. I have no degrees or schooling in business. I've only gone to a trade school, and it's just the school of hard knocks, so you could call it. Plus, I've had some great mentors along the way. So I did open my first business at the age of 22. I went from living in my small 2,000 square foot motorcycle shop to now, yeah, I'm COO of a multimillion dollar company. I'm an inventor. I'm a risk taker. I undoubtedly believe in myself no matter what. I think that's a key. I am my first fan, you know, and maybe that's where some of my ego comes from. But I just recently started enjoying the luxuries of all my hard work, you know, kind of being a slave to my own businesses for years. I'm married for 6 years now. I got 2 kids. They're 2 daughters, 2 and 4. I love spending, you know, any and all free time I have with them. I do love the outdoors, camping, RVing, road trips. I go shooting quite often. I do love fast vehicles, you name it, cars, trucks, motorcycles. You know, my partner and I have some rare motorcycles and cars and trucks. So, you know, that's just a little tidbit about me.
Excellent. Yeah, it sounds like you're pretty dynamic. And certainly you have a long laundry list of hobbies. I don't know if maybe before, you know, I know you have plenty to share about in the business front, but just tell us a little bit more about that. And do you feel like, or how maybe some of those hobbies have helped shape you as an individual and also as a leader out there in society?
Yeah, well, you know, I jokingly say Well, hobbies to me, I don't think existed in my 20s. I was a true slave to my businesses. I look back and think my 20s was a blur, but I think with more balance and learning how to step out from my business, I did start learning, you know, I started doing things that were on my vision board, things that I wanted to always do. And now that I have kids, I'm really forcing myself to get out there and do more hobbies, you know, with either it's our RV or, you know, blowing off steam. I love shooting, you know, skeet shooting to just target shooting. I got my partner into that. So we go out there probably monthly. We even take out our clients. It's funny because we don't wine and dine people for business. We don't take them for a steak dinner or we don't go golfing. You'll find us at the racetrack or at the shooting range. So, and we close deals, you know, out there. We, the funny part was we brought someone out that was a, you know, looking material. He is a buyer for a company, and we took him skeet shooting. And actually, we weren't even hustling the guy. The guy actually came out shooting better than us, and I was quite off that day. He's like, "You guys are truly letting me do better, right?" I was like, "No, I'm actually trying," you know. And you know, like we jokingly say, "Yeah, that deal that day we closed, you know, $400,000 deal." But these are the hobbies we're true to ourselves and true to who we want to be. And I think, you know, it's helped us, I mean, not do the cliche, the normal types of things in business. I think if we enjoy it, we want to invite, you know, anyone in business that we work ourselves or partners with, hey, come out. And we have a couple extra track cars, you know, here, take this car, you know, don't mind if you wad it up. I mean, it has insurance. Like, you know, we'll take clients out to the racetrack. So these are just some of my hobbies. But yeah, with the family, just getting out in general. We have an RV. We want to just cruise the coast. We want to explore the U.S. I spend enough time cooped up in offices and in shops. It's kind of time for me to get out and enjoy life a little bit right now.
There you go. There you go. That's what life's all about, right? You know, go explore the countryside, and now is the time to do it. I mean, shoot, you're still young, you know, 35 young, seven businesses strong, you know. And in fact, on that note, Ryan, you know, if you wouldn't mind, just for the listeners out there, right, because I'm sure they hear that, right, 35 and seven businesses already, would you mind just kind of giving a brief overview and what each of those businesses is?
I'll cruise through them real quick. So my first business, so I have a motor, there are two in the motorcycle industry. I design and sell my own brand parts. So I actually have design parts and, have manufacturers make them. I have like LED motherboards made. So I started that back in 15. That was a fairly recent one. Me and my wife were assembling these parts and we sell it like worldwide and then it took off. Now I have my brother and sister-in-law helping me with that business out of Colorado. So I pay them for their space in their basement and they do all my assembly and fulfillment. And you know, I work with sourcing parts through like Taiwan. They make my taillights. But so that's where more of I am truly an inventor. I've worked on bikes for so long. I know it looks good. I know how to make things look sleeker or nicer. So one of my companies, JL Designs, we do illuminator kits, tail lights, flush mounts, a lot of accessories for motorcycles. And that's just a true e-commerce business. My business that I opened when I was 23 with a partner, that's the shop that's still open and running in Irvine, California. That's Metric Method. We specialize mostly in Japanese and European sport touring bikes. We throw some cruisers and scooters in there too. That's my background. I did leave a computer program degree at DeVry. I was like, you know, one semester me trying my hardest, you know, I wanted to be like, get into rendering or like go to Pixar or go to do video gaming. But me trying my hardest, to be honest, it wasn't what I wanted. So, you know, I pursued motorcycles and I made it, at 23, I found a guy that invested in me and I started it and it's still here running today. And then which leads me into how I met my partner, which now, because we own five businesses together I partnered with him on, three businesses inside the nutritional supplement space. So we do have finished brands products, you know, we can find in retail stores, mostly on Amazon. We're in the vegan / organic sector. Our vegan is climbing quickly to page one for being out of the past 2 years. We truly tried to make the best vegan protein out there, and it took us 2 years to develop it. So right now it's just kind of getting it's getting that traction now, being out a while. So and then we also do raw material trading. So within the supplement space, mostly powdered supplements, we sell to other companies. And two other businesses in logistics, so trucking and 3PL. These are really new to me within the past, they're about a year old now. So that's kind of, and I know I'll explain a little more in detail later on, but how we try to go vertical integrate and why these businesses came about.
quite dynamic, you know, and so for the listeners out there, you can see why, you know, when you meet someone, and especially they're, you know, younger, whether they're younger or older, I guess is irrelevant, but especially if they're younger and, you know, you hear they have seven businesses, and you can kind of hear, you know, within a couple minutes of talking to someone, whether they're full of shit or not, you know, or as Bruce and I like to say, a wannapreneur versus a real entrepreneur, you know. I know you love those out there, Bruce.
I gotta get my son on this JLD7. We have R6s, R1s. We got about five YZ, you know, 250s, and we sell bikes down here and clean the carburetor and then flip them. So wow, this is some good.
Well, yes, let's connect. I've definitely been doing motorcycles, 16 years now. That's one of my passions as well. So we'll connect there.
Good stuff. So I like that breadth and depth of service lines that you have, and that's really good, because you know you're just not kind of pigeonholed into one kind of thing. You're doing several different things, and again, I have a pet fascination with logistics and supply chain, and have had family members work for Amazon and do stuff for them on the trucking and logistic and supply chain side. So that's really cool, man. It sounds like you really got some things going, kind of almost something for everybody. Lots of different stuff going.
Yeah. Well, it's definitely a conversation for more people. When I used to travel, I was just, you know, if anyone sat next to me, I could only talk to them about one thing. And, you know, unless you're in Orange County with a motorcycle, I couldn't really help you. Now, you know, I'm selling in all my business trips. I'm like, you know, this lady knows how passionate I am about my product. She's like, I'm going to go on Amazon and buy this protein right now. So it's in, I love being in different industries. I love that the supplement space is, it caters to a much more broader audience. So yeah, same with logistics as well.
Yeah, and if you haven't tried it, his supplements are fantastic, by the way, you know, especially within the vegan space. Which brings us to our next question. You know, Brian, tell us, you know, if you wouldn't mind, when did you know, like, when was that point in time when the light bulb went off? I mean, you kind of alluded to it a little bit earlier, but you didn't give us the full picture, the full story, certainly. When did you know you wanted to be a business owner?
Yeah, I would say at the age of 6 or 7, I was living in Arizona at the time. Some of my first memories of me running a pretend business. I just got into it. The role of even my mom will agree. She said, like, I turned my room into like a little like, you know, opened the closet. I put cardboard boxes. I don't know if it was a board or a cardboard, but I do remember it still. I would try to work on like RC cars. I don't know what I did. I mean, it's so long ago. I would like turn them upside down and tell the neighborhood kids, like, give it to me. I just probably tighten the screws or clean it off. And then, and it wasn't for money, but it was the practice, right, of like servicing others and making it, like, I felt good. And I carried that passion, that the feelings of doing something. Like, I always knew, like, I would have to do something for myself, right? So, you know, and then I go into middle school, you know, I was soldering chip send to PlayStations, and you know, so they could read these copied versions of the games, right? So I was selling copied versions and offering install on the soldering these chips into PlayStation. So I was always finding a way to get some hustle on and trying to keep myself busy. But my first actual job was at 14. I know only people that hired me was an ice cream shop in the mall. And I had to get a worker's permit, have my mom or sister drive me to work, you know, a few times a week. And, you know, I'll remember my first paycheck. Maybe I was there halfway through a pay period. It's like $90-something, right? I was only getting like $5-something an hour. But my first full paycheck, I was like, it lit me up. I had to call my mom. Right? I was like a $400 or $500 paycheck. And I just told my mom, oh my God, you know, I was like so stoked. So one, if you get to know me, I love working. My wife hates that. She thinks I'm going to be one of those old guys that just keep working. I just can't sit still. Right. So, I love working. I knew I will give it my 100% no matter what I do. I think attitude brings a lot to where you, whatever you do. I was always there not to be like competition in the workplace, but if I'm there, you might as well give it 110%, right? And I always even tell this to younger kids, like, it doesn't matter the job. I could be scooping ice cream, but I do it with a great attitude. You know, some of the store clerks or other retail businesses, they say, man, you got great customer service. You know, so I moved within the mall. So I went to a couple of retail stores. I ended up at a gym. But I'll tell you something. My mind, it moves real quick. I think quicker than the boss. I question all the processes all the times. I honestly don't like being told what to do. So this is kind of things that, you know, through my teens, I kind of knew I'm going to do something on my own, and which got me to like commission jobs. I sold knives. I sold cable service. I sold, you know, like I needed to be my own boss, which kind of set me up even before I left high school. I kind of was knowing, look, I've done that work for people. I'd rather be my own boss. And like I said, I ended up pursuing a passion. Not too many people do that, but like I said, I wanted to get a computer degree, but I ended up saying I may not be rich doing it, but I'm going to love what I do. And my passion was motorcycles at the time. So I ended up going to the trade school in Arizona. Everything I owned fit in my truck, and I just moved to Phoenix to get a trade school degree. And then the rest is history. I came back. I worked for a few dealerships, getting to know every single area within the dealership. And by me vocalizing, I'm going to own one. I met through a customer that invested in me. And yeah, I was a young kid. I was 23 years old, but everyone could tell my drive and my passion is probably a good risk to take on someone that's so passionate and a hard worker like myself. So
that's absolutely. Yeah, you bring up a good point, and I love how you said that, by the way, because I think for a lot of our listeners, and whether you're a coach or, again, aspiring coach or an entrepreneur or aspiring entrepreneur out there, sometimes it's your passion for something, right? Something brings you such great pleasure or joy that you have to do it. And sometimes it's actually the opposite of that. It's avoiding pain. And sometimes it's somewhere in the middle where, you know, like my better half shared a couple weeks ago, you just love, you can't take orders from anyone else, and you're quote unquote a horrible employee, which maybe leads you to being your own business owner, right? Which sounds like kind of similar to your story, Ryan, right? Where you eventually learned you weren't a great employee because you like taking orders from other people.
Yeah, seriously, like I was retail. I try to make things quicker or better or more efficient. Like I was there to do the work. Don't get me wrong. I wasn't a slacker. I was there to probably benefit them. But, you know, there's always the tension or headbutting with maybe a higher up. Like, why are you trying to change things, or why are you trying to work harder than me? You know, so it wasn't cut out for me.
Well said. Well said. So we're going to pivot for a moment and let's talk about some of because this was one of my favorite things, and when we chatted last week, I loved some of your personal stories. I mean, guys, if you have some time to catch up with Ryan offline, I highly encourage you, because this young man has some amazing stories. And in particular, it was your stories of hardship that really struck me. So would you mind just sharing with some of our listeners out there some of the hardships you've had as a business owner and kind of the stories surrounding that?
Yeah, I'll go into, let's face it, entrepreneurs, we face countless hardships and failures, right? So I don't even have enough time. I don't even have the whole week it would take me to go through all of my failures and hardships. But I'm going to focus on a few here, that I could shed light on. But I think my first one is balancing time, right? Because entrepreneurs, we get into doing business for ourselves, and next thing you know, it's like it's 24/7 work. There goes our weekends, there goes our vacation time. And maybe that's what we think is like a compromise. Well, I'm my own boss. It's okay. It's okay. I don't get vacation. It's okay. But then again, you're burning yourself at both ends. You're just like working around the clock. You realize you're missing important things, right? And your friends start disappearing. That's why I said my 20s were like, I was a lonely soldier just at battle with my own business, trying to just get it all figured out. So, my problem was, I basically built a business revolving around myself, if that makes sense. So one of the hardships I had to really learn early on, and I think even my first 6 years in business on that motorcycle shop, I had to be there every day. And, the hours were Tuesday through Saturday, but you know what? I was there Sunday, the whole week, essentially, and maybe a half day on Sunday. And then it didn't take until I was married. I actually says, I'm not going to go in on Sundays anymore. And then I remember when I had my first kid, I was like, I'm not even going to go on Saturday. I'm finally going to give myself the a weekend off. And I felt like that's something I do take back and say, you know what? I needed to be a better delegator. I needed to put more trust in my employees and check in on them often. But I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs are probably on the same boat. They put themselves through a lot, and I opening a business myself, I was getting like mixed advice, like, oh, do everything yourself. Don't trust anybody, and then you get other people that are like, the reason you're going into business is to teach people, everyone you hire, they're an extension of you. You train them. And, you just treat them well, make sure you have good employee retention, and then you can remain a visionary, focus on growth, let them do the day-to-days. But I think one of my earliest lessons was, balancing time. And I think the more owners can free up their time, you're going to notice like, hey, we always give the excuses, oh, I can't afford that person, or I can't do that, but this is all stuff like, the more time you're freed up, the more time you can actually focus on the business. So I would say that was probably one of my first like learning lessons and dealing with the hardship of, trust and delegation to employees. So I'll put that one there at first. Second is, let's talk about foundation. Building too fast, like me, I got a lot of things going on. Or let's talk about those first timers. I only have one business. We already know it's new to them, right? Whether you're a business graduate or not, you're learning all these new things in business, all the day-to-day stuff about workers' comp or insurance, whatever. Your mind's not on like categorizing something correctly in QuickBooks, right? Or your mind's not, like I know for sure for me, the first 2 years, I didn't even file my taxes, right? I was just, I just committed to this lease. I committed to, the bills, and I have an employee. And it is that scary, you jump into the deep end and say, I got a big nut to crack every month as far as my expenses. I let papers pile up, to be honest. My priority was just focused on revenue, getting the customers happy in. Looking back, any other business that I open, I've learned. I said, if the foundation is, that's the core. You got, you don't want to build a house of cards that can be easily just can collapse, right? You want to put time, energy, investment, and you'll find, trust me, you'll find the anything, whether it's selling something, whether it's like, but I always go back and saying, you know, get that CPA in there to set up your books, right? Because I never did that originally. And you can say, well, I can't afford an accountant. Because I think startup entrepreneurs, they're going to be like, you know, the first people that they hired or to help out is like your baby sister or your mailman's friend's daughter that went to is going to accounting in school, and they might help part time, right? These aren't the people you really need to set up, but it seems like to be a common thing with some, you know, new business owners. I say put the money in where it matters. And a few things just real quick, like this is actually where I've lost a lot of money, like HR, legal, and accounting. And I think these are things that are often overlooked when you start up businesses. Like, you know, you're like, well, I'll just figure it out until you have some lawsuits or you have accounting issues and you know, then IRS fees, you know, those rack up and those can get painful. So I say, you know, with foundation, you know, you'll always find excuses you can't afford it. But like I said, even if you can get a CPA office to come in and set it up, you know, I know they charge a couple hundred bucks an hour, but set up your chart of accounts, set up, teach you. I mean, you could learn on YouTube everything nowadays, pretty much. You can just learn how to do your inputs, your inventory, your invoicing. But do structure it where it's like it's somewhat clean and pay someone to get those inputs put in there. And then get the professionals, right? Professionals to come in monthly, quarterly, and depending on the volume, to kind of oversee it. Now, so yeah, basically that was one of my biggest failures. It was, it's just going too fast, and now I'm paying the cost for it currently. It was me and my partner, we were trying to vertical integrate where, you know, we're not perfecting one recipe. You know, look at it like that. We have many recipes, but we're not perfecting any. So I feel as if, like, for example, like, oh, let's just open, like, we're paying about 100K in freight monthly. And hey, why don't we just open our own trucking company, right? How hard could that be? You know, next thing you know, and about $98,000 later, I mean, just to get it, I mean, workers' comp's 28,000. I mean, we went and opened it. I mean, we're kind of doing things that we thought would help our business, but in turn, I think moving too fast, like, hey, before you even, whether you're an entrepreneur like me, you have multiple ventures going on, like sit at one, build the foundation before you go to the next, because, you know, you're at risk of, like I said, I've lost a lot of money here with employee stuff, legal stuff. You know, we now can afford a good attorney on a monthly retainer that can read all our documents, all of our purchase orders. But before, you know, we didn't have that. And we had some bad deals go through that cost us a lot of money in the past year. And, you know, we get better every day and we learn from it. But, I mean, that's why my second point would be just the foundation. Go slow at first. Make sure, you know, at least these three areas, which I've lost a lot of money in, legal, HR, and accounting, these are crucial things to get set up and were truly some of our setbacks operating businesses. So I would have to say that was two of our biggest hardships I wanted to touch on.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it sounds like you even, if, you know, going back further, I mean, talk a little bit, because it was one of my favorite stories you shared, just about, you know, starting and kind of you touched on that briefly earlier, Ryan, just the staying at the shop or that story, you know, if you were to listen to listeners. I thought that was really impactful.
Yeah, we opened the shop end of 16. You know, economy was still good. A lot of people are spending on their bikes. It is, motorcycles are more of a hobby, right? Not a necessity. So we were almost break even by third, fourth month. You know, me and my partner there by ourselves. You know, it was 18. You know, the recession hit. A lot of people were selling their bikes. It wasn't like more of people weren't putting money in toward it, right? Even if their disposable income has gone down, or they just jobs have been cut, or they lost their home. So people weren't spending on motorcycles, and we definitely felt it. which left me and my partner right there talking about we were shutting it down because he had to go get another job. It couldn't afford to pay him. I was like, well, I just remember my number, right? It's $1,300 a month. I just knew with my car payment, my rent, like my food and gas. I was like, I only need to make X amount a month, right? So I was already as tight as I could be, and he needed to obviously make a little more. And he said, I got to get out of here, and pretty much says, let's close up, liquidate. And that was quite unfortunate because I was like, you know, for me, this is I really had to think about it. Like, we're admitting to like a defeat or a failure. And I was like, and that's not an option for me. We already got the business license. We already got the lease. Like, we got the building tools. For me, it was about realizing kind of like when you're sinking, when you feel like there's a failure coming on, there's an opportunity to act. And I acted where I was like, this is my vehicle to success right here. I saw a debt attorney, and with my ego and me not ever asking for money, I had to go to my dad and say, look, this is, you know, a year and a half into it. We're looking at shutting it down. Here's our exit strategy. Here's what we could liquidate for. And then we owe all this. And, he evaluated it with me, and we saw like, yeah, everything we've been paying is going to interest, $18K a year, actually, in interest. I can't forget that number. Like, we were young, we just weren't looking at those fine print things, right? We had a balloon payment, an SBA loan, and these are all learning experiences for me. So I thought, 3 years, we're just paying the interest, and after that goes interest or principal only. Nope, that's not how balloon payments work. Our $200 payment went up to $900. The perfect storm happened at once with the economy. I was left with a lot of debt. The business was slow, partner left me, and I was kind of like, okay. And the debt attorney says, you got three options. You're gonna pay your bills, you're gonna settle, you're gonna bankruptcy. And he was a guarantor, my partner, on a few of those. He's like, no, you can't go bankruptcy. I respect his wishes. So I said, look, that's fine, I'm gonna take on the debt on myself. So partnership broke off, I became full sole owner. I S-corporated it, and then I took on all debt. $192,000 of that debt came to me, and I lived in my shop. I says, what am I going to do to pay off this debt? And there is only one option, and that's how true entrepreneurs have to act in those times. You don't think of it like, because when you really stop to think about, like, I'm not focusing on my failure, I'm focusing on like an alternate route. And that's when I like to speak with other business owners, like, don't ever look at the failure part of it. Like, if you focus too much on the failure, you're going to fail, right? I mean, you could throw out a lifeline, or you that's your safety net. Like, so me coming up with other options to get myself out of there, it required me to live at my shop on the ground. I got a little fold out little mattress at Costco, and it forced me to go to the gym daily. So I was quite in good shape during those 3 years. being a mechanic, you get greasy a lot. So I had to go shower every night. So, but no, I did what I had to do for my business to keep it operating. And through those 3 years living, you smell the fumes, and you can imagine it's a motorcycle shop. So even though it's well clean, you still, it's not the best place. It's not the best environment, right? So, but that was my story on how I brought back that business. It took me 3 years. I paid off all the debt. I remember the feeling of that was like my last payment. I was like, oh man, what am I going to do with the money? And then since then it's been, a profitable business, and I am now partnered on it, looking to even merge with another company here soon. And things are going great for that business. And it was all through my, I guess, dedication and not giving up, right? I'm not admitting a failure. I'm going to see it through to success.
I love that story, Ryan. That story is so powerful as an entrepreneur, because Tony Robbins, who's one of my mentors, says, if you look at any situation, always evaluate it with three potential outcomes or three options, right? Because if you only have one or two, that's too few. You'll have at least three. And you just describe the alternate route, like at least the third, or maybe even the fourth option there, which is like, perhaps you could have, shut the business down and walked away from it, or sold it off. That's option two. Option three is you suck it up. You save the money that you were paying in rent elsewhere, and you live in the shop and let that go toward the, obviously, paying off you know, the business debt. And 3 years later, you're paid up, you're squared up, and now you're able to grow from it. I just love that story. That's a true entrepreneur story right there.
Well, you know, and I save in my shop, in my office, I kept the first original sign that we had above that. I don't think I'll have to keep that for life. I mean, that was my first business and the business I saved through sacrifice. So.
And you know, I don't have certainly one that was 3 years, but I myself, you know, when I was going through a tough time and a divorce for that matter, you know, was faced with similar decisions and slept on a friend's floor, let's call it, for about a year to save money in a similar fashion. So a little bit different, actually a lot different than your situation. But as an entrepreneur and committed to running and owning your own business, regardless of whatever life circumstances are thrown at you, you find a way to make it work. That's right. That's the bottom line.
Exactly.
Awesome. Well, tell us if you would, you know, I know you mentioned, obviously you told us about, you know, at least 3 years sort hardships and failures, but how would someone, and you describe this, you wove this into the discussion, certainly, but like what would you say, principally speaking, if someone wanted to begin to look at their failures as opportunities, how would they go about it? I mean, for example, did you have a process or a mantra or an affirmation or you know, how would someone go about making that shift in their life?
Well, I don't have a process. I think it's maybe a survival instinct, you could call it. I think when we look at, my decision to bail out the company or like take it all on me and live there, right? And that wasn't even, I didn't even have to think hard about that. I, you know, in business owners, this is what makes some true, really great leaders is, you know, it's through, you know, they always say, you know, owners eat last. And that's truly what I did. I had to make sure my guys were paid. My rent was paid. I mean, I get the little crumbs left over, right? But I know it's not that long-term. You know, if I learn from, you know, these failures and mistakes, I'm going to get it back to profit again. So, but yeah, by looking for opportunities and failures, this is something, I do like to touch on. I mean, most of the people I talk to, it's mostly like when I run into entrepreneurs, these are also entrepreneurs that have been around, you know, at least 5+ years into their business. And I think it's often talked about of trying new things, staying current. You don't want to get put out by, technology comes out. I mean, like it's always evolving. We as business owners, we always are at risk, right? We risk our credit, we risk our revenue, we risk our bank accounts. I mean, we kind of risk a lot of things. So I feel failures are always going to happen, right? There's no doubt about that. It's guaranteed. We all know we learn from them, but I look at failure a little differently, and it's just my take on it. To be honest, it's just what I think. I feel as if failures are not the reason that the business closed. I think for maybe some or most cases, the reason is the owners were unable or unwilling to look at their failures at that time as an opportunity, because while you're failing, right? See, once, if you focus on it too much, so if you're sinking, like your business or you get news or something, and don't get me wrong, there's tragic events that happen that will put a business out. But I feel like, you know, you might change your strategy. You might go after, for me, maybe I go after a different demographic for bikes and it didn't work out. Or you always have to have a backup plan. And I think that's the thing with failing is, do you know your strategy well enough to say, look, this didn't work. What is my backup plan? Because I mean, for me, you can look at, I was faced with, hey, what's my backup plan? I just had a meeting with a partner that says, I want nothing to do with this. I'm not getting paid. It's like, it's crap. Let's close it up. And I'm like, well, that's not how I look at it. I was like, there is always a backup plan. And I think a backup plan that serves your best interest and the interest of the company and retaining it, for me, that was my backup plan. So I feel like with a lot of business owners that couldn't make it, I just think they got too caught up and focused on their failure, right? Because I think when you focus like, look at for me, when I was failing, I focused on what I could do. I wasn't caught up on, oh, look at these fumes, look at the oil I have to live nearby. I don't take the failure. Like my focus is always on the exit route. These are like your, like what I was saying, these are your lifeline. These are your, if you hear tragic news, like example, I remember I was at Big Bear camping last year, and we had a $2.5 million PO like given to our company for some material, and we couldn't fulfill it, right? We were too small of a company. I mean, banks weren't lending to us. We were like ramping up so much to get this executed. Like, we got to get it. And I was on the phone camping. My wife was probably annoyed. I was like walking distance from the family, trying to like talk with every lender out there. Right. And then like, you know, like, what do you do if this PO doesn't go through? Like, you have to have the backup plan. Like, what do we tell the customer? What do we do with like, you know, with the supply, with our vendors? We're trying to work, we're trying to play concierge here, we're trying to get everything worked out where we can get it to work with the manufacturer, with the buyer. Next thing you know, we couldn't get funded, but due to our due diligence and maybe seeking out other businesses, we end up finding better partnerships, right? So what I'm saying is, maybe things are meant to be. If you have, I guess, a more positive outlook on things, like, hey, some things are not going to work out for you. And in business, it happens quite regularly. You know, it didn't go as planned, but you can't put all your eggs in that basket and say, this is going to work, right? I mean, if then maybe the whole morale and the whole, you know, this is something that we're approaching and we're going to execute, we got to make this happen. But if it still doesn't happen, there's always your backup plan. And that's why I feel like, don't focus on the failure itself, because at that moment you're failing, like, you should already be thinking, oh, what's already my backup plan? Because then you're already shift. It's like you just switched tracks. You just switched mind, like, hey, I got to get, this is our next route. And I think leadership, you got to be always knowing what's your next plan. You got to kind of be one or two steps ahead, right? So.
One or two steps ahead. Well said. Well said. And you bring up a good point, which we talk, we haven't talked too much about certainly in our time on the show, but it's around spiral dynamics, right? You know, and it's sort of getting caught in your own thoughts. Again, if you're in your head, you're dead, right? Like this vortex of negative emotion and negative thought, self-sabotage and self-talk that happens to individuals and certainly entrepreneurs, that just takes them out of the game, I like to say, right? Oh, I was just saying, you know what? Don't get taken out of the game. Create a new game, right? Mm-hmm. Take a pivot left, take a shift right, and create a new game out of it. And you hit the nail on the head there, Ryan. I think a lot of times, you know, entrepreneurs, it's easy to get caught up in that vortex and just get down on yourself. But it's certainly the ones who can kind of hype themselves or talk themselves out of their own hole, their own negative self-talk and their own vortex, and pivot and change course of action that, you know, certainly sustain and obviously grow and thrive from there. So kudos to you, you know, for obviously doing that with several of your businesses thus far. I know we're kind of coming up on the time here, a couple minutes left, and I want to make sure we give you some time to share, you know, with our listeners out there how to, you know, first of all, find you and your businesses and whatnot. But before we do, you know, maybe any last tips of advice, you want golden nuggets, if you will, you want to leave our listeners with for either current or future entrepreneurs out there. What are like the one or two things that you would share with them as they're ascending and maybe starting or growing or pivoting their businesses?
Well, act now. Time is valuable. Yeah, you're just wasting time if you don't act now. I feel that most people don't start because they're overwhelmed with like all the moving parts in a business. Like, you know, do you let the EDD, BOE, IRS, the franchise tax board, you know, they'll let you know what you're doing wrong. Get out there and open a business. You know what? Oh, I mean, I'm not saying don't comply. I'm saying, you know, of course, get your occupancy permit for the type of work you're doing, maybe your fictitious business name so your bank can cash those checks. But, you know, take some due diligence. Maybe when you hire someone, read up on 1099, W-2, things like that. But what I'm saying is don't focus on all those negative things that are going to take to start a business. it. Because for me, you know what, you know, the city will come in, and well, the county did for me, and said, oh, you have this many drums on site, we're going to charge you $225 per drum. And like, these are like learning lessons you learn as you go. Of course, there's going to be more costly things, but as time went on for me, I learned it. I you know, there's free help out there, or programs, classes, mentors. I mean, Score was big for me when I first started it, and it's something that there's help out there. I mean, like in your programs, you got, the thing is like, if it's just act now, if it's just, I kind of work backwards, me and my partner, we'll just go set up the LLC, right? So next month we have another company, right? We're getting into real estate. We're going to open the LLC next month. So the thing is, when you have skin in the game, you're going to act a little more. So if you just baby step it into the pool, you're probably easier to back out of it. Just jump in that pool, get that prototype of that idea, go spend a few hundred dollars, prototype it, you know, get a patent on it. These are the things. Just if you're don't do it, someone else will, and that's, you're going to regret it. So
well said. Act now, folks. So on that note, before we wrap, because we are at our time, if you could just share briefly with the listeners, you know, what website or two and or maybe a LinkedIn that the listeners can find and connect with you at.
You could, my LinkedIn, just search Ryan Condi, RyanConDie. BN Labs is, you can search that at Our Vegan Proteins on Amazon. I think page 2 right now. We're still working it up, getting up to page 1. But BN Labs, Metric Method, Motorcycles, JL Designs, parts for and accessories. You can connect with me on LinkedIn.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Ryan. Such a privilege having a dynamic entrepreneur like you on our show today. Bruce, I'll hand it over to you to take us home.
Yeah, good stuff. And thanks for sharing those points, you know, because if you sit there and wait and try to play it safe, sometimes you'll just be sitting on the sidelines and the world goes by. So it is an important thing to execute and, you know, course correct as the city or county nails you. So I like that a lot. Hey folks, please come by our show on social media, Concierge Coaches Show. Also, we are on iTunes. So this show and all our prior shows are available for free to our listeners on iTunes. And of course, our shows are archived at the LA Talk Radio website. We have show summaries and backlinks to our guests and whatnot. So you can always log in there and see our prior shows. So with that, we'll bid everybody a great week, and we'll see you here next week on the Concierge Coaches Show here on LA Talk Radio. Take care.
You're listening to the Concierge Coaches Show with Bruce Cameron and Justin Nimmergood, only on LA Talk Radio.